It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live, and welcome to the show. And thanks for listening to us as we talk all things sports today. We have a great show for you with lots of sports to discuss, including Scheffler dominates the Masters, the Blue Jays' epic home opener comeback, Auston Matthews for the Hart Trophy, World Cup of Soccer draw, and the NBA playoffs tip off this week. But first, Mike, how was your week?
Just want to thank Mr. Scottie Scheffler with his Masters win. I brought home some bacon, got some cash, put a futures on him. I think after he won the Arnold Palmer, went online, threw some money on him to win the Masters, and he did not disappoint. Had a cash out option Saturday night. And I was starting to get a little worried because Cam Smith, I mean, going into Sunday, and we'll touch on that later, but thought he had a good shot. But I held with it. I didn't cash out, and thanks to Mr. Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, and obviously on mybookie.com, a great spot to go and place those wagers when you can. And I have a theory, Mike, or not a theory. I guess it's more of a thought process. I don't like cashing out. I never cash out. You play that bet right to the end till you win or lose. Cashing out early, I mean, what's the fun in that? I mean, I get it. If this is a living for you as a sports gambler and you need to always keep making profits, but for the fun of it, a few bucks here or there, you got to ride it out to the end, especially when he's up that many strokes after Saturday.
Yeah, I felt he was probably in good position to win. He had won so much this year, five tournaments he had been in to that point. So rode the hot hand and did not disappoint. Aside from that, the past couple years at the Masters, it started with the 2020 edition. I started making pimento cheese as a sandwich, as a dip. Wonderful. But this time I finally found the proper diced pimentos. So it tasted a little what I would expect it to taste like.
Did you put it into a sandwich or did you just keep it dip?
So I did a little bit on toast and then got some of those Tostitos rounds, and that was an option along with hell of a dip. So that was kind of my snacking choices for the Masters for the weekend anyways. And the only other thing I wanted to mention, and not to make it all Master-centric, but that's kind of my weekend. I felt they didn't play the Masters theme song, the guitar strumming. I think the track's actually called Augusta. I don't think they played that enough.
No, not coming in and out of all the commercials, or they had a little too much of the promos of everything was going on within the actual tournament. I know what you mean.
Yeah, like they used to show the scoreboard, like when they cut away to the commercial, the guitar strums, the piano, you know, the Masters theme song, but they were playing, I guess, like their music decks.
CBS or Sports.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I just felt, I kind of noticed that. I love that song. We get to hear it a week, specifically 4 days. I don't think there was enough of it.
You know, it's funny you talked about Masters sound. I had this interesting thought, I guess, kind of happened too on the weekend. In my basement, I have surround sound that goes around the portion of my basement where I have my main TV. And on Saturday, I was watching it with my mother-in-law, who kept she was half paying attention, half looking on her phone, but she kept looking around the basement all the time and saying, "I think I'm hearing something coming from upstairs." And I said, no, it's just, you know, watching the golf, it's the birds in Augusta. You can hear them through the surround sound. And, you know, as we kept watching a little bit and they were coming through Amen Corner, and she kind of followed up by saying, "Man, those birds are really loud. It's louder than any other golf course or golf tournament I've ever seen on TV." And I started thinking and I started paying a little bit more attention to it. And you know what? I think she's right, man. I think at Amen Corner, behind the 11 green, behind the 12 green, and behind the 13 tee, where there's no people back there, okay? It's just forest of whatever's going on back there, mystery land at Augusta. I think they're piping in bird sounds through speakers. It is so loud and so clear there's no way there's that many birds tweeting around through Amen Corner.
If I was a bird, I'd be damn happy to be at the Augusta National Golf Club. I'd be singing my ass off. But I think there's actually, I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they have said, or there's been articles written or something, theories, whatever, articles, I don't know, but people have said they do pipe in bird noises. No birds
that
singing that much.
Weird? No. Is that not weird?
No, I don't notice it. It's just happy birds, man. They're excited for the Masters.
It was so loud. It was just coming out like crazy. It was wild. But for me, you know what? Speaking of kind of birds, transitioning birds to fairies, I want to talk about fairies. And what kind of fairy? I want to talk about the tooth fairy. Because we had a little incident over at our house last week since I guess we last talked. So my seven-year-old, he lost one of his front teeth. It was like sideways for like a week and a half. And finally, someone at school said, hey, just grab it and yank that thing out. He finally did it. He was so jacked up. He was so excited. Came home from school to tell us, you know, he goes to bed. He puts the tooth in this little tooth pillow from the tooth fairy. And you put it underneath. And that's where the tooth fairy takes the tooth from and obviously leaves you some cash. So it was Wednesday night and I was all jacked up about the Masters. I was getting excited. I was working on organizing my dad's Masters pool. I help him with that. So I was working on it. I was watching Tiger from 2019, as I mentioned, part of my tradition. I watched that full round. So I had that on the big screen. I stayed up a little bit later. And when I went to sleep, my wife was already passed out. She was out cold. So I just shut her down, getting excited for Thursday morning to see those guys tee off. And you know that scene in the movie Home Alone where they wake up, the power had gone out, they wake up, the two parents jump out of bed, they look at each other and they scream, we overslept.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like crazy chaos after that. Well, I can kind of hear my son from the other room. He's calling our names, mommy, daddy. And my wife and I wake up Thursday morning, we look at each other and we say, the tooth fairy never came. We, the tooth fairy, forgot to show up. So we were scrambling. He's like, my tooth is still here. My tooth is still here. The tooth fairy never came. So we're like, holy smokes. Think quick on your feet, a little foggy in the morning. So my wife like runs downstairs and, you know, there's a letter from the tooth fairy downstairs on the kitchen table saying, hey, I was a little busy, didn't have time to come up to your room. Leave your tooth tonight. Here's $10 to get you through the week. No big deal. But it was a scramble session on our behalf.
So the tooth fairy didn't have time to take the tooth, but they could write a handwritten note and leave $10. I used to get like a quarter or a dollar.
Oh, it's too much now. I mean, especially after this mishap, I'm surprised my wife didn't leave him $50, you know, whatever I had in my wallet, take it. So but you know, tooth fairy came the next night, took the tooth as well. She's a woman of her word, let's say. So all was good. And now his other tooth is about to fall out as well. So we'll be watching that one. Tooth fairy will be back in a couple weeks. But hey, we have a ton of great sports. We got more Masters chat. We got lots of hockey, some soccer, lots of good things. So stick around. We'll be right back. What a glorious weekend watching the scenes from Augusta. The pink azaleas, the green of the fairways, and the red of Tiger. The Masters will be our T1. With so many storylines set up for the Masters, Scottie Scheffler playing in his first tournament as the number one player in the world fell down the list, but he quickly proved why he is the best player in the world and took control of this tournament on Friday and walked to his first major and first green jacket. Mike, did Scheffler prove he is the best of the new young crop coming up?
Hard to argue he isn't. You know, as you said there, Thursday, he shoots 3 under. He's 2 behind Sung Jae Im with a group of other guys. Cam Smith was there, DJ, some very notable names. Goes out, shoots 67 on Friday and opens a 5-shot lead over Im, who fell back a couple strokes, and Charles Schwartzel, who won 11 years prior. And really since, you know, after that, after Friday, he really just not put it in cruise control, but he was solid. Shoots back-to-back 71s on the weekend. four putts, 18, to still win by three, which is, I think, a dream for anybody. But it just felt like throughout the course of certainly Saturday, you started to notice it a little more, and into Sunday, if he made a mistake, the next shot quickly put him back on, you know, on track.
I agree. Yeah, scrambling of some sort was really good. But yeah, Friday for me is when he kind of stole the show. It was the afternoon, and he was really starting to take off. And then he tied for the largest 36-hole lead at the Masters, five strokes, as you mentioned. His iron play, it was just spot on. Everything from either the fairway or the first cut, he was able to pretty much find the green or leave it a little bit in a nice spot. They always talk about, you know, the Masters, you got to leave it in the right spots, have the good misses. And his putting was good too. I mean, he wasn't nailing putts like crazy, but he was never getting himself into trouble where there was a long par putt to come back. He kept it close to, you know, gimme range. And then by Saturday was the day, you know, I thought, okay, maybe he'll stumble on Saturday and allow others in the field to catch up, which is really common at the Masters. They get that bunched up leaderboard by Sunday, but he stayed strong, shooting the one under in the tough, windy conditions. You know, he had some of the greatest players in the game. They were struggling on Saturday, Tiger included, but he didn't have any trouble with that. And then by Sunday, his lead was so good out there, he really just had to hang on. And even with the push from Rory or Morikawa, didn't really matter because he was playing his same game all day. You could tell he was a little bit nervous though on Sunday. It was all over the place the first two and a half holes, but when he hammered the chip in for birdie on three, it got his confidence back. His touch around the green kind of kept him out of trouble, as you mentioned, and he never really had a serious issue from that third hole on till he got to 18.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Cam Smith, who we talked about off the top there, birdies one and two and cuts the lead, you know, after two holes, cuts it to one, and they're behind. And then, as you said, Scheffler gets the chip in, which was crucial for him, but equally as important, Cam Smith bogeys. And then he bogeys again on four. So Scheffler kind of regains his lead. I think, as you said, the chip in kind of regained his confidence. It helps that the guy he's playing with and the guy who's right behind him bogeys the next two holes to kind of calm the waters a bit. They both exchange birdies on seven, and at that point, Scheffler has a four-shot lead as they go forward.
And I actually think it helped Scottie Scheffler that he was playing with Cam Smith. Now, let's remember, Smith, just 3 or 4 weeks ago, he won $3 million winning the Players' Championship. He was down by four going into Sunday. He had nothing to lose. He could be as aggressive as he wanted to be, and he was aggressive right off the bat. Birdie, birdie, and then bogey, bogey. That's how he started the round. And I think Scheffler was like, hey, you know what? Maybe if I just cruise control here, this guy's going to be all over the place trying to catch me. I don't need to worry about it. The back nine, you know, for Smith, he went bogey, birdie, and then double bogey. So because he fell off, Scheffler never had to really worry. He never had to be like, oh, I better have a good shot here because Smith is tight for birdie. And if I bogey, it's a two-shot swing. He never had to worry about that. And at Augusta, there's not a ton of leaderboards all over the place. So he didn't really know what else was going on. And he could just focus on his game. If he had been playing with a guy like Rory who was shooting lights out, maybe he starts to feel that pressure. Maybe he makes a couple shots that he doesn't usually plan on doing, and it could cause him a little bit more trouble. But Scottie didn't have an issue. Again, his fourth win in 57 days. It's incredible. I want him to go on a run this summer, something that we haven't really seen since Tiger in 2010, maybe. I want to bunch of wins this summer. I want majors, other majors being won by him. I want him in contention all the time when he plays. I want this guy to take over the golf world this year.
$8.8 million earned in six starts.
Woohoo!
Not bad. Not bad. And no, he's won some pretty big tournaments along the way. And I think the coolest thing about it now, he is playing the Masters for the rest of his life, which is a fantastic reward. Your boy Rory, you know, typical struggles in round one. But I mean, he didn't even really struggle. He was okay. But shoots a 64 on Sunday to really kind of make some noise. But as you said, I think, you know, too far back, obviously, Scheffler in cruise control. But a solo second for him, he keeps knocking on the door, and you have to think, eventually the door might open for him one of these years.
I don't know, man. I'm going to disagree with you on that one. And it was this tournament that made me realize maybe Rory isn't going to be that champion's champion, because you're spot on. He was great on Sunday when there was no pressure on him whatsoever. And that's when Rory performs his best, when there's no pressure on him. He's made a ton of money. He's got a ton of wins. He's got majors. For whatever reason, at the start of tournaments, he just tenses up and things don't go well for him. I mean, you mentioned it. I took Rory top five and that cashed with his great performance on Sunday. But I honestly don't think he should be a top five favorite going into majors anymore, because he just doesn't perform well enough.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, one guy that did perform pretty well in his third straight Masters, our Canadian boy, Corey Connors, three straight top tens for him now. And, you know, he's playing well. He's playing really well.
He's always in the mix there. I mean, I'd put a nice little asterisk beside his name as a potential winner in the future at Augusta. But we really should also talk about what the other big story of the week is, and that's Tiger Woods playing, confirming he was going to play on Tuesday, and then showing up on Thursday, and crowds were going nuts. TV was following him. It was magical to see him out there. Everyone I know that's into golf was locked in for this round on Thursday and were hanging on his every shot. He looked great. His swing looked like he could possibly win. His putting and chipping had not lost a step, and he knew how to play the course, which helps him. That experience is so big at this course, and he obviously has that. But like anyone, when you work out, let's say you go to the gym for the first time in a long, long, long time, maybe a year, you finally get back going to the gym. The next two or three days, you are sore and you can barely move. And that's what it looked like for Tiger. He was plus two on Friday, plus six on Saturday in those tough, cold conditions. It just wasn't the same Tiger that we saw on Thursday. I mean, I want Tiger to play and I want him to win, but I don't know if he'll ever be able to put four rounds together to win a major like he used to. It sounds like he's only going to play the majors from here on out, and maybe his conditioning just needs to get better, because it was a rough last 3 days for Tiger.
Yeah, I think we need to put in a perspective as well, right? Rewind back to February of last year, he almost lost his life.
Yeah.
And to have the comeback that he had to play, he probably was not 100%, but enough that he felt he could go out and play. And I think that's one of the things with Augusta, the guys who have won there, who have played there numerous years, know the course, they know how to get around, and they can put together a couple decent rounds. And that's what his Thursday was, and then unfortunately fell off, and you could tell that, you know, Augusta, which is a tougher course to walk, took its toll on him. But look, I mean, I think what he accomplished coming back from what he did to compete, to make the cut, play all 4 days, I think he should be tremendously happy with that. I know, obviously, he's a competitive guy. He wants to win. But when you put that into perspective, I think, you know, he achieved a lot this week. And it sounds like, you know, he mentioned, as you said, unsure of playing the PGA next month and the U.S. Open in June, but confirmed himself for the Open Championship at St. Andrews in July, which he said is his favorite course. So we'll see. I mean, hopefully something in between if he can, but, you know, I think you should be happy with where he was this week, all things considered. And I'm sure we'll see the red shirt at Tiger on Sunday competing again soon.
Let's continue on with traditions and move to the Blue Jays home opener, which will be our T2. Friday night in front of a sold-out Rogers Center for the first time since September of 2019, the Blue Jays hosted the Texas Rangers. But they did not get the pitching they were hoping for to start the game and quickly had to dig themselves out of a hole. And boy, did they deliver. Mike, was this comeback a sign of what to expect this season?
Well, I think it answered a question we didn't really need answered, that the offense is good. And we all kind of expected that, knew that. you know, little disappointed for Barrios, only lasting a third of an inning, getting hit pretty hard there in the opener. And, you know, I mean, it's early. It's the excitement of opening day, the excitement of playing in Toronto, capacity crowd, short preseason, spring training, sorry. So especially important for pitchers to get their innings and work in. And, you know, I think we saw that theme over the course of the three-game series with Texas. Gausman was the only guy that went five innings of the three starters. So I think that will correct itself as the season goes on. But, you know, like I said, the question nobody needed an answer to, we got it regardless this weekend.
Yeah, down 7-0 after three innings. Barrios being pulled in the first was not the start they wanted. Not that the fans were expecting that. I mean, Barrios even gave up a home run to the first batter of the year. Just sucked the entire emotion out of the building. And as someone that was at the game, it felt like the whole life of the 45,000 in attendance was gone. Considering the high expectations, and I know it was just one game, but even I was a little bit confused to the start, starting to think, geez, is this team not up to the hype that everyone thought they were going to be? But they pulled it back together. I mean, in the seventh inning, Hernandez on first, Gurriela Jr. hit a line drive down the left field line to score Hernandez, who was called out at the plate first. But after review, he was safe, and the place went nuts. And the Jays didn't really look back after that. They knew that they were going to pull off this win. And it should have actually been a sweep of the weekend after that good win on Saturday. They had the lead 6-1 on Sunday, but Ryu started to get rocked a little bit in the fourth and fifth, and the bullpen just fell apart after working a ton on Friday, which is always the concern when your bullpen is pitching a ton in game one of a series. But, you know, it's something that the Blue Jays are going to have to monitor, and that's Ryu. He's going to be one of those guys that's not going to give you 6 or 7 innings. So can he do 4 strong, maybe 5? It's something that Montoya is going to have to look at and get him out of the game before he blows up, because we don't want to be in trouble late and having to come back like they did on the first game a whole bunch this year.
Yeah, and that's where having a longer reliever, you know, a guy like Nate Pearson who has started in the past, can help in those situations. And like I said, I think as the season gets on and the guys get more innings under their arms, that will start to level off again. But, you know, a good weekend for a lot of the bats. Vladdy was hot, 5 hits and 11 at-bats against Texas, sorry. Home run, 4 RBIs. Chapman hits his first there on Sunday as well. So now they go to the Bronx for 4. Always good. Always good to see them play the Yankees. That should be a battle all season long, and then return home for 3 against what's left of the A's, I guess.
Yeah, minor league squad. And actually Wednesday night, Barrios will be back on the mound against Gerrit Cole, who also had an interesting kind of start to his season, not pitching well. So both of those guys will be looking back. And, you know, my biggest concern around the MLB after, you know, the first weekend is pitching and how the short spring training that you mentioned will affect them. We saw high scoring games and stud pitchers struggling, like the Barrios one being pulled early and Cole as well. This could be load management for these pitchers early on this season, or it just could be that these guys didn't get enough reps in the season and they're going to be, you know, not very good. So a lot of hitting, a lot of bullpen arms. I anticipate a lot of pitchers going on the IR early on this season because they just weren't ready to start the year, and it's going to be evident quickly. But one thing I did want to touch on as well, Mike, was just the opener. I did mention I was there. It was awesome to be back in the ballpark for a home opener, something I've done many, many times in my life. And it is a tradition for me and my family. And I took, you know, my wife and my boys and my in-laws, my mom and my sister's there, my dad's there. Everyone's there. It's such a good time. And it was a great celebration by the Jays. Honoring the Canadian Olympics, I thought, was a great little touch at the start. The crowd loved it. And I'm sure the athletes did too, considering they won these medals on the other side of the world with no real fanfare. This was their opportunity to shine and have a standing ovation. So that was awesome at the start. As well, it was nice to have Marcus Semien, who's now with the Rangers. He was there, and the Blue Jays could honor him for his Silver Slugger Award with Guerrero and Hernandez all on the field together. That was so cool to see. The new scoreboard at Rogers Center is awesome. Wait till you see it in person. You got to go down and check it out. It's bigger. It can work as kind of one big giant screen or kind of be divided into different parts. Really cool. Overall experience at the game was a 10. I recommend everyone in the area or from not anywhere near Toronto, come on in and go see it. I talked about it a few weeks ago about how, you know, this is where the ballpark needs to be and the changes can come internally, and they started that already. It was a great place to watch a ball game on Friday, so make sure to go down and check out the Blue Jays there. Sticking with our Toronto theme for today, Austin Matthews had a hell of a week that will be our T3. Matthews scored his 50th goal of the season on an empty netter a week ago, and since then he has already passed Rick Vive for the Maple Leafs single season record of 54 and is closing in on 60 for the year. Mike, is Matthews the clear-cut leader for the Hart Trophy this year?
I think so. I think his name is certainly etched in the conversation now, and I don't know how you pick against him. Likely going to be the first player since Stamkos to score 60 plus in a season. It was a 2011-2012 season, was the last time that happened. He's sitting at 58 going into this week, 99 points, so he's going to hit that, you know, milestone as well. 8 goals in his past 5 games, including 2 against the Habs on Saturday night. Leafs got 10 games left. I'm saying 70.
Oh,
he's on a good pace right now. I'm not a math guy, never was, never will be. But I think if you look at his percentages with goals and games, and, you know, someone smarter than me can figure that out, I would tend to think he's got to be very close to hitting that 70-goal mark, if not high 60s when regular season's done.
First star in the NHL this week, of course, no-brainer, scoring 6 goals, including an overtime goal that puts him in all the highlight reels for the season. We know that he can shoot. We know that he can handle the puck better than almost anyone else in the league, but he showed that he can skate and move just as good as Connor McDavid when he needs to. He was robbed of this being his third 50-goal season after COVID cut 2 previous seasons short. I mean, he had 47 when the NHL was shut down in March of 2020. He would have easily passed 50 there, maybe even 60. The big thing for him over the last few years of his career is that he's gotten bigger and stronger. He can protect the puck and retrieve the puck with such ease, and not a lot of players can do that with his skill level, and I think it's really helped him. You mentioned it, 10 games left. He's on a roll right now. I think he's going to blow past 60 probably before the weekend comes around, but he's going to need some help to get to 65. He's going to need his teammates to look for him on occasions when he's on backdoor on power plays or when there is an empty net. That's going to help as well. He'll play all the games. He kind of has to play all the games, and Sheldon can't really sit him down. But he might not play the full minutes that he's used to playing down the stretch. Even if they clinch that home ice for the playoffs, it's going to be tough for them to keep sending him out for 20 minutes a night, because they're going to need him for the playoffs, because that's the most important thing. And that's the thing he's going to be remembered about this season, is how did you do in the playoffs, particularly the first round, which hasn't been so great for the Leafs in the past. I mean, all the talk around this Maple Leafs team was the goaltending and how they can't win without making a deal at the deadline for a goalie. But that was 3 weeks ago, and since then, Matthews has kind of taken over the team and taken over the league. He's clearly the Hart Trophy winner this year in my mind.
Yeah, I agree with your point. I think once they get into that space where they can lock up home ice and maybe get that 2 seed in the division, then at least, you know, if you go the distance, you got that home advantage. Once that's settled, then, yeah, maybe you start looking at, let's get ready for the playoffs. But just looking around the league, Stark, not much has changed in the East. We know Toronto's moved up. Tampa, Boston have shifted down, but everything looks relatively the same in the Eastern Conference. The West, Colorado is the only team as of the start of this week that has clinched a playoff spot, but you know, like some other teams would probably get there. And it's going to be interesting to see who grabs the last two, three spots in the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's going to be a tight battle right down to the end, and it's going to be playoff hockey for a lot of those teams leading into it. Last thing, Mike, I just wanted to touch on Austin Matthews. is an accomplishment that I think is actually being overlooked. I know a lot of people are talking about the Rick Vive one and how that's been around for 40 years and he finally passed it, but he scored 50 goals in 50 games. And no matter what time in the season it is, that's a big accomplishment. It hasn't been done since Mario Lemieux in the 90s. He's the ninth player to do so, but it is unofficial because it wasn't the first 50 games of the year. But still, it's 50 goals, actually 51, in 50 straight games. The only ones to do 50 goals in 50 games includes Maurice Richard, Mike Bossy, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and Brett Hall. But the unofficial list also includes Jari Kurri, Alexander Mogilny, Cam Neely, and now Austin Matthews. For him to be in that category is amazing and something that he should be very proud of.
That's pretty good company.
Now, the last 2 weeks have obviously been very busy in the sports world that we couldn't get to our next topic. But now we're going to break down the World Cup draw in our T4. Canada qualified for the World Cup of Soccer for the first time since 1986, and the entire country was waiting to see their ball selected during the draw show. But we had to wait till the last ball to find out that Canada would be in Group F with Belgium, Morocco, and Croatia. Mike, is this a good slot for the Canadians?
I think gone are the days of the easy groups in World Cups, and you know, the past 2-3 maybe even 4 World Cups have kind of proven that the playing field has leveled off a bit, and typically what you would perceive to be an easy group is not the case, and those teams can easily qualify. Just in turn, a group of death may not actually be a death sentence for some teams. So
right,
I think it is a difficult group. Belgium, regardless of what we think of the FIFA world rankings, there's, you know, take those with a grain of salt, but Belgium is the second ranked team right now. Croatia 16th, Morocco 24th, Canada's 38th. It's a system, you know, that needs some explanation. We don't have enough hours in this show, but I think if you look, it is going to be a very competitive group. I do believe Canada has every chance of getting through the group. Croatia, a bit of an older group, made it to the finals of 2018 World Cup, where they lost to France, went out in the round of 16 last summer at the Euros. Belgium, semifinalists at the 2018 World Cup, quarterfinalists at Euros. And Morocco, group stage exit in 2018 and went to the quarterfinals of the African Cup of Nations earlier this year. So, look, I think it's a good balanced group. Any one of these four teams could get through. I do like Canada's chances, yet probably favor Belgium as their toughest opponent of the three. That being their toughest opponent, you don't favor Belgium, but I think Canada has a very good chance of getting out of this group, and I expect that they will.
Now, as a new kind of passionate Team Canada soccer fan, this is how I looked at it. And I was looking at some of the other groups to try to stack up. How is Canada going to do in their group? This one kind of gives me hope for the Canadians because anything can really happen. I mean, we beat Mexico. We beat the United States. So why can't we pull off an upset here or there to get top two in our group and move into a spot where we move on to the next round?
Yeah, like I said, just looking at the groups, there's not one group where I look at of the groups here and say, this is the easiest group, this is the toughest group. Each group presents its opportunities and its challenges. And I think, like I said, over the course of the last few World Cups, you start to see teams that are perceived as, you know, maybe underdogs get results and get through. And that's the beauty of it. Like I said, the only knock I have is that this is a November-December World Cup. Yeah. Much would I rather this in the summer. But it should be good. I think there's a lot of parity in the groups. It's going to be really exciting. And, we'll see how things shake out here throughout the summer and gearing up for the tournament. Canada plays Belgium first, November 23rd, Croatia on the 27th, and then Morocco on December 1st, and all the games 2:00, 11 a.m., 10 a.m. So decent times, no 2-3 a.m.s like in 02 when it was in Japan and Korea, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, and actually, I happened to be off on the day of the draw, so I watched the whole thing. I was like, you know what? I'm going to tune in and see what this is all about. I'd never actually really watched one before, simply because I'm not a huge soccer fan, but also more because Canada's never really been in it in my lifetime. So I actually sat down, watched it. The show was long and had a Oscars feel to it. But once they got down to drawing the teams in the groups, it was really cool. I was waiting for Canada to be selected to see what country they'll be facing and who they would be playing in the first game, second game, third game. But it was really cool to see the country's fates kind of resting in the hands of these old footballers who were picking up the balls out of the little glass sinks, I guess you would call them. It was kind of funny how they did it, and they do it live right in front of everyone. There's no hiding or any conspiracy on who's playing who, because it was drawn right in front of you on live TV. It was very well organized. The rules were very clear about what was going to happen and how teams wouldn't be able to be in the same group if they were from the same confederation. So I was able to follow along, and I thought it was kind of had that tense feeling. Now, do they always have a play in for those last three spots?
There are playoffs for certain ones. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Did not know that. Learn something new every day. It's playoff time, baby. The NBA is set to start their run to the finals, and that will be our T5. The NBA play-in games are set to start this week, with the 7-8 seeds playing one game to clinch the 7th spot, and the loser playing the winner of the 9-10 game. In the East, we have number 7, Brooklyn, versus number 8, Cleveland, and number 9, Atlanta, versus number 10, Charlotte. While in the West, it's number 7, Minnesota, versus number 8, LA Clippers, and number 9, New Orleans, versus number 10, San Antonio. Mike, who do you like to make it to the official NBA playoffs?
I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. You think of like last year with Brooklyn, who were one of the top teams in the East, and now they're in a play-in situation. I don't know. I like Brooklyn probably to get through and take that 7 seed, and then Cleveland will get another chance. And Atlanta Hawks too. I mean,
yep.
You know, that's what's exciting about this construction that they have with these playing games is, like, you know, Atlanta, Brooklyn were great teams last year and made good runs, but now they're playing to get into the playoffs, and I think it makes it exciting. So if I have to pick here, Stark, I'm going to say Brooklyn wins, and then Atlanta edges Cleveland in the East.
Right, in the East. But for me in the East, I see it a little bit different. I agree. Brooklyn, no question. I mean, I'm assuming Irving and Durant both will be playing. They'll cash that ticket for the 7th seed and move on to go play Boston, which will be a fantastic series when you think about a 2-7 playing in the first round. But then I like Atlanta, who's had a great season, you know, last year, excuse me, but they kind of struggled early this year. They ended at 43-39. I like them with that superstar Trae Young. You know, I was on him last year. Big Trae Young guy, and he could take over. And he could get back through that Charlotte in the first round, then go on and play Cleveland, who loses to Brooklyn. Why can't he take over 2 games and win and get them to that 8th spot? He can score at will. But, you know, he does struggle defensively, being an offensive superstar. He needs to improve that. But, hey, 2 games, winner take all. I think Young's got the ability to help them move into that 8th spot.
So we agree, Brooklyn and Atlanta.
Yes.
Good. Okay. We're just continuing the trend from last week.
And then in the West, who do you like in the West?
Ooh. I like the T-Wolves. Clippers are a good team, but I think the T-Wolves take that game. San Antonio, New Orleans. Let's roll the dice here. I'm going to say New Orleans and Clippers, and the Clippers get in. So I like Minnesota as the 7 seed and the Clippers as the 8 seed.
See, I kind of agree, but I have a little bit different. I got the Clippers actually beating the Timberwolves. They've won three of their four head-to-head matchups this season, so maybe they can continue that streak. They're obviously going to have the home court advantage in that game. They'll get the seventh spot. Now, New Orleans Pelicans, it was a nice story having them get into this kind of play-on, even without Zion Williamson playing much this year. But I like the Timberwolves, no matter who they play from that 9-10 game, because they're a pretty strong team. Anthony Edwards, D'Angelo Russell, they can get that eighth spot. So I like the Clippers at 7 and then the Timberwolves at 8. But Mike, what do you actually think of this concept for the playoffs with the play-in for those last two spots? Do you think it would work in hockey or some format of it in football?
Yeah, maybe in hockey. I mean, in games where, or leagues where there's so many games over the course of a season, right? Like in football, I think it might be a little bit tougher because there's only 16 games or 17 games. Sorry. I forgot that 17th game, but I like this. You know, you're giving the last two teams who theoretically would get in, your 7-8 and the 9-10, an opportunity to play for a playoff spot. So, you know, sometimes when you're a 10 seed and you know you're 10 games out with not many games to play, you know, you're out, right? This gives teams something to play for longer into the season. And, you know, as a neutral NBA fan, it's more exciting. You know, I know people will have their teams and they will be hell-bent on them, but as a, you know, a neutral fan, it's cool to see these must-win games, and there's going to be, what, six of them over the course of the week.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's great, great theater, great TV. You know, you feel sometimes for these teams that just missed the playoffs by a game or two because maybe they had some injuries, maybe they had some illnesses, maybe they rested players because of travel, whatever the way the schedule works, and then they miss out because of that. This gives them that opportunity. And the NBA, you know, unlike the NHL, has been known for years about the first round being duds because the top four teams just blow out the bottom four teams. So let's be honest. The teams that are seeded 1 and 2 and are going to face these teams in the play-in, they should smoke them anyway. So who do they care who they play? They get a couple extra days to rest. Let's have some enjoyment of some one-off games. I think it'd be cool for hockey too. I know the purists would be like, that's too many teams in the playoffs and this isn't the way the playoffs are done. It's 4-7, but who are you kidding? Hockey fans would watch it too. It's a one game to get in. You're going to watch it. I think it'd be cool to see in other sports as well. I did want to touch just before we finish basketball, because the next time we speak, the Raptors, our hometown team here, will be in the playoffs. The East is going to be tough this year. The Raptors finished the year strong, ending at 48-34, moving them all the way up to that fifth spot. They're going to play the Philadelphia 76ers, who are a tough, tough matchup. Philadelphia is the better team. They got more offensive power with Embiid, who won the scoring title, and Harden. We know all about him, but let's not count out Toronto. Nick Nurse, you know, he can work his playoff magic against teams. We've seen it before. Teams that have more skill, the Raptors were able to beat them in that 2019 championship run. So maybe they got a chance here to make this a long series. And who knows when you get to game 6 and 7. Siakam, Van Fleet, they're the leaders now. They're the ones that need to use that playoff experience that they've had in the past and be able to build with this team. And I'm hoping the Raptors have a bit of a surprise run this year.
Well, one thing that can give us some optimism, they played 4 times this year, Stark. Raptors beat them 3 out of 4 times. All 4 games were single-digit wins, so they've been tight games. And I think a lot of the pundits are expecting this one to go the full series, and it probably will. But you know what? Raptors are a real tough team, and I think it's going to be probably the best series, the most contested series probably of the first round, and probably the most exciting.
Don't listen to Shaq, who says the 76ers are going to sweep the Raptors. So he doesn't know what he's talking about. But let's move into our golf picks. Now, going into the Masters, I was leading 33-14. I had Scottie Scheffler, who won the Masters, for 10 points. I had Rory McIlroy, who finished 2nd for 5 points. I had Justin Thomas, who was T8, for 3 points. That brings me up to 56. Mike had Smith tied for 3rd for 5 points, and Will Zalatoris, who was T6, for 3 points. So now I'm leading 56-22 going into the RBC Heritage this week in beautiful Hilton Head, where 17 of the world's top 32 players will be playing. Mike, you have first pick.
The committee wants you stripped of 34 points to make it 22-22 since you didn't properly award me my points for Keegan Bradley at the Valero Open, man.
Who's watching Keegan Bradley to know what he's doing?
Well, I did, and he got me points. We're chipping away. We're coming out hot here. Corey Connors.
Oh, great pick. Great pick. I think he's going to come out very positive after this week. I'm going to go with Justin Thomas. Played very well down the end of the Masters. Bad start, so maybe he can continue that and try to prove something this week.
I'm going with my next pick, Shane Lowry. Played well over the course of the Masters, got himself up there on Sunday, and think he's going to have another good week this week, Shane Lowry.
I'm going to go with the guy playing well leading up to the Masters, but struggled a little bit, made the cut, but just couldn't get anything going. I'm going to go with Daniel Berger.
Okay. I'm going to take the 2020 champion, 7 top 10s and 12 appearances here, Webb Simpson.
Love it. I'm going to roll with someone who's hot this year, played very well. We talked about him. And this is a perfect time to announce this, but Mike and I have decided that this podcast is going to be pro Team International come the President's Cup this year. We're rooting for the Canadians and the Aussies and the Koreans and whoever. If you're Team International, that's our guys. So I'm going with Cameron Smith with my last pick. Mike, we're ordering hats, we're ordering t-shirts. It's a great logo if you haven't seen it. So go Team International. But listen, stick around. We got a little bit of more Masters chat for you with a Would You Rather edition. So stick around. We'll be right back. We won't see the beautiful grounds of Augusta again for 12 months. So we needed one last segment on the best weekend in sports. So we'll be playing Would You Rather Masters Edition. And we'll start off with this, Mike. Scottie Scheffler 4-putted for a double bogey to win the Masters on 18. So I ask you, would you rather win the Masters with a double bogey on 18? Or would you rather win in a playoff?
Double bogey. I couldn't care less if I got double. As long as it wins, that's all that matters. You don't have to deal with the pressure of having to then go to a playoff. Double bogey.
For me, it was cringeworthy to watch the Masters end on Sunday with the guy who dominated all weekend, chopping it around like he was playing a twilight round with his buddies. I actually feel bad that that's how it ended for him, and I'm sure he's kicking himself today about it, saying, what was I doing at the end there? Therefore, I'll take the playoff. It would be nerve-wracking to play in a playoff, but look at the special moments that have come from extra holes at the Masters, including Bubba's hook shot, Adam Scott in the rain, and Canadian Mike Weir.
Same thing happened at the end. He got his $2 million check and a green jacket. Doesn't
Same
matter.
Same conclusion. Next one, would you rather a hole-in-one on the 12th hole in Amen Corner, or would you rather a hole-in-one on the 16th hole over the water?
I'm going to say the 12th hole, Amen Corner. That's where runs seem to start or end at Augusta. One of the toughest holes, very picturesque, as I mentioned last week, one of my favorites, 12th hole for me.
I'll take the 12th all day. I've already stated on this show that it's the harder par three than the 17 Island Green at Sawgrass. You would have to calculate the wind and place the ball perfectly to get it in the hole. Only 3 hole-in-ones at the 12th hole ever at the Masters, with the last one in 1988 by Curtis Strange. The 16th, on the other hand, has had 23. And the 16th is always set up on Sunday for hole-in-ones by putting the pin down in the punch bowl at the bottom. If you catch that edge, it will roll perfectly down to the pin. Plus, on 12, you have the massive crowd behind you. And when you hit the ball, You're the closest one to it. With everyone looking over your shoulder, the roar would be heard across the entire course, especially for those players that were putting on the 11th or teeing off at the 13th. Next, would you rather play with Tiger Woods on Thursday and Friday, or would you rather play with him on the weekend at Augusta?
Thursday, Friday. If he's contending or I'm contending, well, I guess theoretically we both be contending on the weekend if we're playing together. A lot more pressure, a lot more eyeballs, a lot more people following you. I'd rather play Thursday, Friday, you know, first couple rounds. Be cool to play with Tiger, get a sense of what that's like. And then, you know, the weekend, either you're going home or you're in contention and you can focus on that.
I'm getting the sense that you don't like pressure whatsoever or any sort of nerves.
It's not so much that. I just think, you know, the flip, you could flip that around, Stark. The, you know, Saturday, Sunday, it's all about Tiger. So you can focus on your round. I'll still say Thursday, Friday.
Well, for me, it's the other way. Now, we saw Neiman. He bogeyed the first hole on Thursday, kind of pulled it together after that. Louis Oosthuizen, he actually pulled out of the tournament after Thursday, didn't even play on Friday. The pressure of playing with Tiger got to them. On Saturday, he played with Kevin Kisner, who was one of the most liked players on the tour, and Kisner shot a three over. And then on Sunday, Woods played with Rahm, kind of in a meaningless group, and Rahm was three under, playing pretty well. So give me the weekend round with Tiger, because then I'm in the mix for the tournament and we'll be competing against each other, not just playing together. I will probably play brutal and he'll kick my ass, but at least maybe I'll be able to write a book about it and how I played with Tiger on the weekend at the Masters. Next one. Would you rather go to the Masters on Saturday or would you rather attend the Masters on Sunday?
I'll take the Tuesday practice round and watch the rest on television. If I had to pick one of these two, it'd be Saturday. Sunday, you know, Saturday's moving day. You can kind of walk around, see what's going on. Sunday, they do a real good job of covering this on television, and that's the place to watch it. So I'd rather attend a Saturday.
I hear this question a lot, talked about quite a bit as people bid for the tickets and wonder if they'll get tickets and if they do, where they'll be. But let's remember that there are no cell phones on the course and very few scoreboards. Most Sundays at the Masters, unlike this one, have about 7 to 10 guys that are kind of in contention, and you got to know what's going on. That's why for me, I'd rather go on Saturday, experience some big roars. But on Sunday, when all the action is happening, put me on the couch with a bag of barbecue chips and a few cold Coors Banquets, because I'd rather watch it on TV. Next one. Would you rather see a first-time Masters winner, or would you rather a previous champion win again?
I think both provide great stories. Depends who. I mean, if it was, you know, a Tiger winning again, or, you know, somebody else who's won a couple that maybe fell off,
Phil.
Or somebody else who fell off a couple years and came back, right? But I like the first time winners. It's, you know, we saw it last year with Hideki and what a great story that was. This year with Scottie Scheffler and what a great story this was. I like the first time winners. Give something different, and always interested to see what they're going to choose for the champions dinner next Tuesday, or a year Tuesday, I guess it is.
Now, 7 of the last 8 winners at the Masters have been first-time winners there, with only Tiger in 2019 being a repeat champion. For a course that is always talked about as being so tough and unique and how you have to know the greens and where to hit it in order to win, the previous champions have not done so well. Even this year, only one past champion was in the top 10, and that was Charles Schwartzel, who has not made a cut on the PGA Tour this year. I want past champions at the top of the leaderboard. It brings in the history of the tournament and building on their legacy. I want Woods. I want Spieth. I want DJ and even Sergio going for multiple green jackets. I would also think that the champions want the same so that it stays an exclusive club. After both of these golfers missed the cut at the Masters this weekend, would you rather be Jordan Spieth or would you rather be Bryson DeChambeau?
I'd say Bryson DeChambeau. He's coming off an injury. It's clear he's still not 100%, and he's working back from that. Spieth's struggling. You know, he's been struggling for weeks. The putter's been bad, and you know, I think Bryson's more injury related than performance. So I'd say Bryson.
And no one likes Bryson, and he was barely talked about leading up to these Masters. Remember, it was only 3 years ago that he said Augusta was more like a par 67 for him. His game doesn't work at Augusta, and he, as you mentioned, is battling injuries. But let's give him credit. He stayed quiet this week and just played and then left. No BS or trying to make it about him or complaining. Jordan, man, is he lost. Not only is he struggling with the putter, but now he can't hit an iron shot. It is actually tough to watch his pre-shot routine with all the movement and loading before he actually hits the ball. He needs to just go back to his swing the way he had it when he was a kid coming up and when he first started winning on the PGA Tour, but it might be too late for that. What a fall for this guy. So, you know what? In this situation, I guess I'll take Bryson DeChambeau. Last one, Mike. Would you rather win one Masters and no other majors, or would you rather win 10 majors, but none of them at Augusta?
The Masters once. If you do it right once, it's good enough. It's the best tournament. It's my favorite. That's it.
Easiest question ever asked. Give me the one Masters. I get to play at Augusta every April, and I probably get to play it at least a few times every year with friends and family. I get to go to the Champions Dinner and hang out with the legends once a year. Then, when I'm at my cottage having a beer with buddies, I can tell them all the stories from those secret dinners, which would be really cool. I get to play in the par 3 tournament with my kids and my wife and eventually my grandkids. And of course, I have a green jacket. The PGA, US Open, and Open Championships are amazing, but there's no lasting connection with the winners in those tournaments. You win and move on, just like the tournament does as it goes from one location to another every year. Give me that one special weekend at Augusta because it will last a lifetime.
You saw my food menu last week. Come on. You think I want a PGA Beautiful. Championship? Forget it.
PGA Championship, you just put hot dogs on the barbecue. Yeah.
Come on.
Now sign up today with MyBookie and use promo code JABO to make your first deposit. Follow our picks with a chance to win only at MyBookie.com. Now each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. I had Rory finishing top 5, and with that great Sunday, he cashed. Well, Mike took Rom top 5, and he ended up T27. Mike, you're on an epic cold streak. Do you have anything to say for yourself?
Yeah, my lock of the week is my wallet. I'm not making a pick this week. I'm doing the people no justice here, so I'm going to sit out this week, regroup, come down from the Masters high, and be ready to go next week. So Stark's lock of the week.
Every gambler needs to be a responsible gambler and know when to take a break. Smart for you, Mike. Sit this one out. I got you.
No
one, I got you.
No one to hold them, no one to fold them.
Okay, so college basketball is over. The Masters has ended. So it's time for me to focus on the one thing I know, and that's hockey. The Oilers have figured it out and will be in the playoffs going 7-2-1 in their last 10, while the Golden Knights are now on the outside looking in. They're on their Western Canadian swing playing Vancouver on Tuesday, Calgary on Thursday, and then Saturday night in Edmonton. That's a tough, tough road trip. And I like the Oilers to take advantage and secure home ice in the playoffs. Give me the Edmonton Oilers over the Vegas Golden Knights on Saturday nights. Now, we want to hear from you, so make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts,
can't lose.
Oh, yeah.